From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Billionaire powerhouse and former Prime Minister of Lebanon, Rafik Hariri, was assassinated in Beirut yesterday in a blast that shook the city for miles around. He had resigned as Prime Minister just 4 months ago in protest over Syria's long occupation of Lebanon. 16,000 Syrian soldiers and intelligence agents have a heavy footprint in Lebanese life and politics. Many in Lebanon had hoped to see Hariri lead the country again. With his stunning death, protesters took to the streets in mourning and general strikes. Outside Lebanon, world leaders responded to the assassination with dismay. French President Jacques Chirac said the former prime minister embodied Lebanon's will for independence and democracy. The U.S. State Department expressed profound outrage. White House spokesman Scott McClellan pointed to Syria's troop presence in Lebanon as a destabilizing force.
We want to see Syria change its behavior and play a constructive role in the region. And we want to see Syria use their influence to prevent terrorist attacks from happening in the first place. That's what we've made clear. Syria and their troop presence in Lebanon is a destabilizing force in the region.
Today, Washington recalled the U.S. ambassador to Syria, but a tape sent to Al Jazeera might make Al-Qaeda a suspect as well. Tonight on Point, the aftershock of a high-profile assassination in Lebanon. We begin in Beirut. Kim Gaddis is Lebanon correspondent for the BBC. I asked her how Lebanon is responding to the killing.
There was a very uneasy calm on the streets of Beirut today. Lebanon is mourning the death of the former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. A three-day mourning period has been declared. Today was the first day of that mourning period. Everything was closed. Shops, schools, banks, public institutions, everything was closed. People were mostly sitting at home, watching the news on television, reading the newspapers, trying to understand what happened in their country yesterday and trying to come to terms with the fact that a man who was such a central figure on the Lebanese political scene is no longer alive. I went to the scene of the blast earlier today, and there were lots of people there, lots of Lebanese from different backgrounds, different ages. They had come to see exactly for themselves what had happened. They wanted to see the damage. They wanted to understand where the blast had taken place. And many of the people I spoke to said they could still not believe that Mr. Hariri was no longer alive. Many people spoke of their fears for the future of the country. There is a lot of uncertainty here at the moment about what the death of Mr. Hariri exactly means for the country.
We've read reports of attacks on Syrian workers in Lebanon today. What's happened there?
Yes, even before the investigation began, and it hasn't ended yet, we have some clues as to what happened, but the investigation is certainly not completed yet. Even before all that, anger in Lebanon was already directed at Syria. Syria is Lebanon's political master. It has 14,000 troops here, and there has been a growing opposition, more and more vocal, demanding the departure of Syrian troops, demanding an end to Syria's control over the country. Now, Mr. Hariri himself was not formally part of that opposition, but he was growing closer and closer to members of the opposition. And the feeling here in Lebanon is very much that he paid the price for that. So even before the investigation is concluded, fingers are already being pointed at Syria here. There is a lot of anger, and this is why we've seen these outbursts on the streets of Beirut and the streets of Mr. Hariri's hometown in southern Lebanon, the town of Sidon. We understand several young men tried to beat up Syrian workers. There are many Syrian workers trying to make a living here in Beirut. And also yesterday in Beirut itself, people tried to torch the local offices of the Syrian Baath Party. Many of the supporters have directly blamed Syria for his death. And certainly the opposition here, although not everybody in the opposition has blamed Syria directly, many people say that regardless of who was behind this attack, the Lebanese and the Syrian authorities are to blame for the death of Mr. Hariri because they are in charge here. Syria does control the security here to some extent, and people say it should have prevented the death of Mr. Hariri if it had wanted to.
But suspicion is by no means limited to the Syrians. We're seeing on Al Jazeera, the satellite broadcasting system there, a taped claim by a Palestinian suicide bomber that he allegedly planned to kill Mr. Hariri, and also talk of some connection to Al-Qaeda. Can you fill in that picture for us?
Well, the tape that was aired by the Al Jazeera satellite station was by a group calling itself Victory and Jihad in Greater Syria. This is a little-known Islamist group. We've heard from them once before in relation to another attack. They said in that tape that they had carried out a suicide operation, that their aim was to kill Mr. Hariri because of his ties with Saudi Arabia. Now, it must be said that we've also had another statement posted on the internet by Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the infamous militant linked to al-Qaeda. He said that there was no truth to the statement issued by the other group. What he said in the statement, no jihadi groups had been involved in the killing of Mr. Hariri. And certainly it should be pointed out that members of the opposition here, allies of Mr. Hariri, dismiss these claims of responsibility by this jihadi group, saying this is just a subterfuge trying to divert attention from the real culprit.
Is there a general expectation that the murderer or those who planned this attack will eventually be identified, or is this destined to be a mystery?
I think that, like many, many political murders here in Lebanon, we might very well never know who exactly ordered the killing of Mr. Hariri and who carried it out. Lebanon has seen many, many political murders over the last few decades, mostly during its bloody civil war, when several leading members of Lebanon's political scene were killed. We saw a more recent assassination around the year 2000, a former warlord was assassinated. And we saw again last year in October, a member of the opposition and former minister was also targeted in a car bomb. He survived, but his bodyguard was killed. And in all these assassinations, in all these attempted targeting of political figures here in Lebanon, whether they were successful or not, we never really found out who was behind these violent acts. And most people here in Lebanon don't expect that they will ever find out for real, that they will ever have the proof of who was behind the killing of Mr. Hariri. But people seem to have made up their mind even before the end of the investigation. They seem to have made up their mind that the culprit here is Syria, whether it's directly or indirectly.
Kim Gaddis, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kim Gaddis is Lebanon correspondent for the BBC. She spoke with me from Beirut. We're talking tonight about the aftershocks of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri's assassination. You can join the conversation. Whose fingerprints do you see in the assassination? Does this look like Syria going after a critic, Al-Qaeda going after a friend of the Saudis, or something else? Is the Iraq Mideast war front being spread now to Lebanon? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Richard Murphy. He is former U.S. ambassador to Syria and to Saudi Arabia. From 1983 to 1989, he served as Assistant Secretary of State for Near East and South Asian Affairs under President Ronald Reagan. He has known former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri since the early 1980s. Ambassador Murphy, thank you for being with us tonight.
Very welcome, Tom.
We want to turn to your interpretation of what may be going on here, but I wish first you just take a moment to remind us of the man, Rafik Hariri, a real powerhouse in the region. Give us a sense of who he was and his significance.
He was an oversized figure, both in terms of his physique and the way he had built his career. He started out poor. He was from a family in Sidon, Lebanon. Thought he might become a teacher, did go through a Lebanese university, then moved to Saudi Arabia, as many young people did in his generation, to make his future, make his fortune. And he succeeded incredibly in first in a partnership, and he bought that partner out quite quickly. And
this is a construction company.
Construction company. Mm-hmm. Called Saudi Auger, and what he did extremely well, which were major public works, built quickly, and the Saudis tend to be very impatient when they commission a work, they want it done right away, like yesterday, and he presented high-quality products very quickly on command, and he became a favorite of the government, favorite of the royal family for doing that. I think his first work was on a big conference palace, conference center in the mountain areas of Saudi Arabia.
And he also became
completed.
He also became a billionaire. He came back to get involved in politics in Lebanon. Richard Murphy, Ambassador Murphy, what did he stand for in Lebanon to the Lebanese?
One of his, one comment that was made when he first came back to go into politics, this was after the 14-year-long civil war, and he had worked hard as a mediator trying to bring that war to an end. That's where I first met him in the mid-'80s. When that it took another 5 years after our first contact for it to grind to a halt. But he came back to Beirut to launch himself. He had dual nationality by then. He had been given Saudi nationality, retained as Lebanese, and went into politics. I didn't think of him as a politician because he made his name as a very rapid decision maker, playing for high stakes, very hard driving. And I said, my golly, how is a man like that going to adjust to sitting around and cutting the endless deals that characterize Lebanese politics?
Right.
But he did.
And did he become a figurehead for opposition to Syrian occupation in Lebanon, or was he in a more subtle position than that?
Definitely more subtle, and that's why, frankly, I'm puzzled by the assassination. It's too easy to say, because he was such a critic of the Syrian presence, the Syrian occupation, he was not known as a, at least out in public, as a strident critic of the occupation, unlike some of the other political figures in Beirut. I think he recognized there were forces there that he simply couldn't talk away and couldn't talk down.
And so a lot of mystery around this assassination, but clearly a region in an uproar over it and beyond the region as well. Ambassador Richard Murphy, we're delighted to have you tonight. Please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're talking tonight about the aftershocks of a high-profile assassination in Lebanon. What should the U.S. response be? What about the United Nations? Who's to blame? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the aftershocks of a high-profile assassination in Lebanon, a former prime minister dead in the street and suspicion running in many directions. You can join the conversation tonight. Whose fingerprints do you see in the assassination of Rafiq Hariri? What should the U.S. response be? Is this an Archduke Ferdinand moment? Is this how war spreads and multiplies? Will the Bush administration take this as a ticket to ride into Damascus? Should it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight from Silver Springs, Maryland, by Richard Murphy, former U.S. ambassador to Syria and to Saudi Arabia. And right now from Bronxville, New York, by Fawaz Jerjes. He's professor of Middle East and International Affairs at Sarah Lawrence College, author of America and Political Islam. Fawaz Jerjes, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
There's much that we want to hear from you, but let me just ask you right off the bat, the ramifications of this assassination, how do you see the ripples winding out from Beirut now?
Well, I think the Lebanese are extremely terrified of the potential consequences. I think the assassination of former Prime Minister Hariri reminds them of the ghosts of the Lebanese Civil War, which lasted from 1975 to 1989. But I think regardless of who did this horrible deed, it seems to me the big lessons is that, I think Syria appears to have exhausted its usefulness in the country. And I think the Syrian military and security presence has become a liability to a healthy political life. And I think regardless, again, I doubt it very much, as the BBC correspondent said, whether we're going to find out about who did this particular crime. But it seems to me that there's a consensus emerging among the Lebanese that Syria must go, that time has come out for the Syrian military and security presence to end, and that Lebanon should let be. And it seems to me also, Tom, again, we don't have the evidence. There is no smoking gun. But the Lebanese opposition yesterday and today said that it holds both the Lebanese and the Syrian governments responsible for the attack. One of the most, impressive Lebanese politician, actually intellectual politician, and I think Ambassador Murphy knows him. His name is Marwan Hamadi.
Uh-huh.
Marwan Hamadi was almost killed, Tom, in September. A similar attack took place against his life in September. Two of his bodyguards were killed. He survived. He said, quote unquote, he said the plot was hatched in Damascus, and both the Lebanese government, the Lebanese security services, and the Syrian security services were part of this particular plot. And it seems to me a consensus is emerging in Lebanon that Syria's military presence is untenable. The question is, how are you going to dislodge the Syrians? I mean, the Syrians have almost 14,000 military and security forces in the country. Syria controls political life in the country. It has manufactured a political class that is extremely pliant. And the Syrians would say, listen, I mean, if we leave, the whole country could, relapse back into civil strife. So if you have us, well, you might have some instability. If you don't have us, you might have a full sectarian strife. It's a very difficult situation, very, very complex situation.
Ambassador Murphy, I want to ask you on the Syrian front. Washington has had Syria under a magnifying glass with the Bush administration, lots of chest beating in Washington, a kind of threatening posture towards Syria. They've been lectured many times. Here, Fawaz Jirjiz is quoting Marwan Hamadi saying that the plot was hatched in Damascus. But wouldn't it be, I don't know if suicidal is the right word, but wouldn't it be incredibly provocative for a government under such scrutiny right now and threat from Washington to take such a highly public step as this, to be in any way attached to the assassination of such a high-profile figure in Lebanon?
I agree with you. It doesn't make sense. They've been on the blacklist for Washington, of course, for some time now, particularly in the given the events leading up to the invasion of Iraq and ever since. But I don't rule out the possibility of a rogue element in that very elaborate set of security services operating from Damascus. I don't know. Let's see if there is an investigation or if anybody comes forward with hard facts to uncover who actually ordered and performed the deed. It's hard to imagine what would be in it for the government of Syria as such to have done this. As I repeat, he was not a strident, outspoken critic. He did disagree.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't
right.
like at all the Syrian very heavy-handed intervention in Lebanese politics last fall in insisting that the present president of Lebanon have an unconstitutional extension of his term in office.
And this is a bitter rival of Rafiq Hariri, Mr. Lahoud.
Yeah, there'd been a deadlock in the operations of the government for the last few years because of that rivalry.
So Syria's been very deep in it very recently. That led to his departure from the government. Fawaz Jirjiz says, lots of attention being focused on Syria, but I don't want to just pass by the videotape, the tape shown on Al Jazeera with the claim that Mr. Hariri was killed for his support of the Saudi royal family. He was, as Ambassador Murphy pointed out, and everyone knows, he was close to the Saudi royal family. He made his fortune there. Do you give any credence to the theory that this might have been a backhanded attack on the Saudi royal family?
I mean, I think let me just at least take a point. Ambassador Murphy mentioned that the Syrian government. I don't think defies convention. Common sense for the Syrian government to basically give the orders for such given the fact that 2 years and given the fact that the Syrian government is basically under considerable scrutiny. Not just by the United States, but also by France and the international community. But I think the point, Tom, what we need to remember is that, I, as a student of Arab and Muslim politics, I think I'm still in. I have a limited experience, but I'm becoming more and more cynical about the question of rationality in Arab and Muslim politics. And I tend to take now that irrationality is as important as rationality when we're talking about what I call the so-called security apparatus regimes, point one. Point two is that you have various elements within the security military apparatus in such regimes. And such apparatus, Tom, usually are run by close relatives of, and have tremendous leeway to, theoretically speaking, you can imagine such a rogue element in the security services either of Lebanon or Syria. Thirdly, Tom, and this is, I think, a point it has not really been discussed quite widely, we have in Lebanon very nasty political parties. As you know, in Lebanon we have the so-called Baath Party, one of the nastiest parties in the Middle East, the Lebanese Baathist Party, which is a small, tiny faction, an extension of the Iraqi and the Syrian party. And we have also the so-called the Syrian Nationalist parties. And those parties have been on record basically threatening the opposition figures. And they accused Prime Minister Hariri just a few days ago of funding, financing the opposition and running the show behind the scenes. So it does not really have to be the government of Syria. It could be pro-Syrian elements, rogue elements in Lebanon that could have done so. I mean, theoretically speaking, of course, we don't know.
And are you waving off the possibility of an al-Qaeda, let's say, related attack on the Saudis here?
Let me come back to al-Qaeda's link. First of all, we are speculating, Tom, and I hope that our listeners
understood.
Know that. I mean, I don't personally, and I don't buy al-Qaeda's link. I think it's far-fetched. Let me say why it's far-fetched. First of all, the first question, Tom, couldn't al-Qaeda find bigger fish except the former prime minister of Lebanon who has close ties to the Saudi family? Let me just a few words for our listeners. As you know, Lebanon has become a playground for the Saudi royal family and the wealthy in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf.
It's been harder for them to come to the U.S. and Europe since 9/11. They can go to Beirut and have a great time, glittering town.
The ambassador of Saudi Arabia dines in Lebanese restaurants almost every night. Leading Saudi Arabian princes dine and stay in the Bristol and the Phoenicia Hotel, I mean, on weekly basis.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda could have found some major big fish in Lebanon.
I see.
And finally, the question, Tom, I mean, all of us should ask, why kill former Prime Minister Hariri, Rafi al-Hariri, who basically resigned last October and implicitly, Tom, joined the opposition against the controversial role that's being played by the Syrian security. These are legitimate questions. And when we put the questions on the table, this is not to say that Syria was behind it or we have evidence, but these are legitimate questions. And surely, suddenly, the security Lebanese forces, extremely incompetent security, suddenly knew the person, they raided his flat. It's really unbelievable that it boggles the mind.
And yet, the former prime minister is gone. Fawaz Jirjaz, Ambassador Richard Murphy, please stand by for a moment. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington, Tyler Marshall. He's foreign affairs correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Tyler Marshall, thank you for being with us tonight.
Good evening.
Very strong language out of Washington today, and of course it's not the first time toward Syria. Apart from the denunciations, do you see the United States preparing to take some action, whether on its own or through the UN, against Damascus following this assassination?
Well, I think at the moment they're in a mode where they want to exert as much diplomatic pressure as they can, and they've taken this opportunity to apply that pressure on Damascus, stepping back from directly accusing them of this.
Very close, but not an outright accusation here.
That's right, by inference, and going straight to the agenda that the administration has been pressing Damascus on for a long time, and that's to get out of Lebanon, to stop supporting the insurgency from safe havens in the Iraqi insurgency from safe havens in Syria, and to supply and make the job easier for terrorist groups, militant groups such as that are working in the Palestinian West Bank.
But is this assassination going to be taken as evidence that U.S. pressure on Damascus has not been effective and that there needs to be stepped-up pressure? That for a long time, there seems to have been a faction in Washington that wants to get really threatening with Syria. Will they be encouraged by this killing?
Well, this is certainly an opening for the administration to apply this pressure, and I think we have to wait and see how Damascus reacts. I think that there's general agreement here that the atmospherics, that the conditions are probably better than they have been in a long time to exert, for the administration to exert real pressure on Damascus, because the Syrians, to a degree, are more isolated in the Arab world than they have been in quite a while. The Egyptians and the Saudis, Mahmoud Abbas, also weighed in, asking them to rein in the militant groups. Mm-hmm. So the moment is right to exert more pressure. There's moves to condemn it in the UN. And there's the Syrian Accountability Act, which can bring economic pressure on them. So I think there are steps to go here. But I think the administration feels that the time is in its favor on this one.
Ambassador Murphy, you represented the United States in Syria and in Saudi Arabia. You advised the State Department under President Reagan on this region. What do you think U.S. policy, the next U.S. steps should be here? What do you think they will be?
Well, Tyler used the phrase real pressure, the opportunity for real pressure in Syria. It's not going to be all that easy because take the issue of trade investment in Syria. There's practically no American trade, very little investment. There's some oil exploration going on. So we have had sanctions to a considerable degree on trade ever since the mid-'80s.
And more since last May.
And more since last May, but... the Accountability Act gave the president the option of picking, I think it was 2 out of 5 or 6 sanctions. He chose some lighter ones. Mm. And yes, he can go ahead, but I'm not sure I see all that much pain that can be inflicted through the sanctions route. The public condemnation in the UN, if it reaches that point, that could be effective. That could be painful for Syria. But last year... the administration tried to get Syria named, and there were other members in the Security Council that said they wouldn't name any single country. They talked of the need for all foreign forces to get out of Lebanon.
And what about the big stick? What about the big stick regime change? It's been raised before by the U.S. in this region. Might it be raised against Damascus?
I dare say there are elements in Washington that feel that we've had such a success in Iraq, why not go ahead and do something in Syria? But I don't think they're in a position to engage the administration on that course. Our military is stretched, and the idea of getting into another Arab country and being responsible for the fallout, I just don't think it's on.
Fawaz Jirzes, apart from big language, what do you expect from the United States now?
Well, I think I expect an international approach that combines the United Nations. As you know, the United States and France are collaborating on the question of Lebanon. They have been collaborating in the last few months. And UN Security Resolution 1559 would not have been passed without this coordination between the United States and France. And I think international community, I mean the United States and France, in the United Nations, and using the agency of the League of the Arab States, I think the Syrians need to be told very simply and very decisively that their very presence in Lebanon doesn't a great deal of harm. In fact, it's going to take Syria many years, even after it leaves Lebanon, to repair the damage that has been done to relations between the Lebanese and the Syrians. And I think I think this would be disastrous. It would produce the opposite results. I think a diplomatic approach, a consistent, systematic, coordinated international approach in the United Nations, the European Community, also making major initiative to the League of the Arab States, exerting diplomatic pressure on Syria to basically define its strategy in Lebanon. Because the truth is, Tom, I mean, the Syrian government keeps saying, listen, our military and security presence in Lebanon is vital to preserving security in the country.
Right.
And regardless if Syria did this act or not, we don't know. The truth is, obviously, its presence is not providing security, as the assassination attempt clearly showed 2 days ago. And the question is, so why does Syria have 14,000 security and military personnel in the country.
If they're not providing security. Tyler Marshall, I've just got you for another half minute. What do you see coming out of Washington? Readiness to work through the UN, the international approach that Fawaz Jerzhez is describing here, or something more solo?
I think all of those, but there's one great gift in this in this assassination to the administration, and that is that President Bush is headed for Europe next week, and suddenly he has a very high profile issue that he can stand shoulder to shoulder with Jacques Chirac on.
Yeah.
There aren't many that many issues that he can do that with.
But here's a big one in a French sphere of influence where they're fairly well aligned. Tyler Marshall with the Los Angeles Times, great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, we're talking about the aftershocks of a high profile assassination in Lebanon. I'm joined by Ambassador Richard Murphy and Fawaz Jerzhez. You can join us as well. Is it time to drive Syria out of Lebanon? Would that bring more stability or less? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a former prime minister dead in the street in Beirut and suspicion running tonight in many directions. You can join the conversation. Whose fingerprints do you see on the assassination of Rafiq Hariri? And what should the U.S. response be now? What about the United Nations? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests tonight, Fawaz Jerzhez, Professor of Middle East and International Affairs at Sarah Lawrence College, and Richard Murphy, Ambassador, former Ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia for the United States. Abdul is calling from Kamak, Long Island. Hi, Abdul. You're on the air.
Yes. Just I want to add to the discussion that Mr. Hariri was a big loss. I'm like a Lebanese-American, and he's the big loss for all Lebanese people, background, whatever religious background they are.
You're Lebanese-American, Abdul. What did he stand for to you?
He was the hope for me to go back and live back in Lebanon. He was like the hope for all Lebanese, you know. Like, I'm like Shiite, and he's Sunni, but doesn't matter, because he was the only difference from Mr. Hariri was he wasn't world lord. Most of the leaders in Lebanon, they all of them like political parties leaders. So like, you know, he's the only one he wasn't involved in the civil war in Lebanon.
And played a huge role in rebuilding Beirut. Do you blame Syria for what's happened, Abdul, or not so sure?
It's like, you know, we are all Lebanese. We want Syria out of Lebanon. So, but I don't think this much obvious they did it. Like, I can't say 100%.
Right, but a big vote of praise for the departed former Prime Minister Abdul. Thanks very much for your call. Let's get another caller here. Stephen is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Well, it seems like it's a little too much like rounding up the usual suspects, and it's a little too convenient by half. As you say, Tom, it seems like a pretty well-orchestrated opening and a gift to the administration in this country. Our puppet's going to Europe next week, and he can manipulate this issue.
I don't know, but it sure is mysterious. I have to say that. What do you think, Stephen?
It smells a little like the 9/11, a convenient pretext for invading a country or two.
You're a 9/11 conspiracy theorist?
Syria has been on our hit list for a while, and also the country to the south of Lebanon might be involved as well.
You're saying Israel, but what would the logic of that be?
Destabilize the Midwest.
Or Mideast, for that matter.
Mideast, sorry. Because we're involved in a major real estate move the borders around and suck up the oil. So I think it serves the interests of dear Sharon. And I think Murphy knows where the skeletons in the closet are buried. Ask him.
Got it. There's a real skeptic's view of what's going on. Ambassador Murphy, how do you respond?
Well, the only other source I've heard talking about the Israelis being involved was out of Tehran, and even there they said Israel had the capability to do such a thing. But
And Damascus today, I should say, in fairness, I mean, maybe it's predictable, but Damascus said today Israel continues to work to sabotage Lebanon's achievement. But we've heard that kind of language, of course, many times from Syria. I'm sorry, Ambassador, I interrupted you.
No, I think that's consistent with what I was trying to say. I think people have introduced the Israeli element as a frankly red herring. As far as Bush manipulating it through somehow causing the assassination of Erie, that I just can't accept.
But what about behind that, the caller sees a thirst to kind of get the whole playing board in play here. But you're saying this is out of bounds, even for that
I certainly think the assassination is out of bounds, and I hope I'm right. I'm not a current member of the administration in any sense, that one of the lessons learned last year was that our military has its limits, and we reached those limits in Iraq, where the appetite for a military operation against Syria, I would hope, is zero.
Fawaz, you're pinning the blame somewhere in the Lebanese-Syrian security circle broadly, as I hear you. Do you have an open ear to any other theory of what might have happened here?
No, really, Tom. I mean, I think it would be quite—we don't have the evidence. I'm trying to—we're speculating about, potential perpetrators, and we're talking about the consensus in Lebanon itself. Mm-hmm. Vice President Khaddam, Syrian vice president, yesterday, he explicitly blamed Israel. And the Syrians and the pro-Syrian elements in Lebanon also blamed Israel. I just don't know. I mean, it's...
What interest could Israel possibly have in the death of such a figure?
According to the Syrians and the Iranians and the pro-Syrian elements in Lebanon, they would like to at least get the administration to exert more pressure on Syria. Syria is being squeezed more and more by the day. That the Syrians are on the defensive, and this would be the last, you might say, bullet that basically will slay, the ghost. In Lebanon, if the history of the civil war in Lebanon taught us any lesson, is that even during the dark moments of the Lebanese civil war, every bombing was basically ascribed to the Zionists and the Mossad.
Right. Let's look at...
We don't buy it. It just doesn't make sense.
Let's look in another direction for a moment. Steve Weissman in the New York Times is writing today, quoting a Western diplomat saying that the United States, in so strongly condemning Syria's possible role in this attack in Beirut, may also be trying to rebuke Iran. How does Iran factor into the Lebanese equation, Fawaz Yurjus, and through Syria?
It does. I mean, remember, Tom, I think the most important priority to the U.S. administration, and I'm sorry to say so, is not really Lebanese independence. Lebanon has not been, and Ambassador Murphy would tell you more about this because he was part of the Lebanon was not and is not a priority on the American foreign policy list. Mm-hmm. The two most important portfolio are the question of Iraq and the question of Hezbollah, because the United States, the Bush administration, has accused Syria of basically of shutting its ears and eyes for the at least flow of militants and jihadists from the Arab world into Iraq. And also it accused Syria of supporting and allowing Hezbollah to function in the south. These are the two important portfolios. And the administration basically believes that it is the Iranian-Syrian connection vis-à-vis Hezbollah. This is a very important element for the administration. And really the question of Lebanon's independence is a secondary, takes a back seat to the question of the Iranian-Syrian relationship vis-à-vis Hezbollah. The administration believes that Hezbollah plays a destructive role in the Palestinian-Israeli peace process and basically is a highly security risk for both Lebanon, the region, and Israel as well.
Ambassador Murphy, then, does the United States... let's say Syria pulled out of Lebanon. We saw that before, that there was civil war, and it became a kind of a free fire zone for a while, it seemed there. Could the United States perversely be happy to see Syrian troops there because it gives them someone to hold responsible for Hezbollah or anyone else who gives Israel trouble?
I think Washington came to the position some years back that it would be better to have Syria out. There is a small percentage of Lebanese, and perhaps some on the American side, but I don't think a majority in either case, who think that Syria has provided some degree of stability there, and they would be worried about a descent or moving backwards into a civil war situation. But in terms of squeezing Syria, let me remind you that one thing Washington did was squeeze Syria very hard just in the recent past over the issue of it's buying Russian missiles, a new generation, I gather, of shoulder-carried missiles and squeezed so hard that you got the Russians saying, oh, well, we didn't intend to sell them, and Syria saying, well, we didn't intend to buy them, and, you know, everybody dodging. So it is possible to exert pressure but other than military means.
Gus is calling from Boston. Hi, Gus, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. How are you, Barry? First of all, I want to say, pay my condolences to the great Prime Minister, which he made the Beirut International Airport state of the art. And second of all, you know, I want to echo my voice to those others in Lebanon that the Syrian army must get out of Lebanon. Very simple as that. And the only reason is they do not leave Lebanon because they steal every day multi-million dollars and the streets are full of thugs. They call themselves workers, thieves, you name it. It's just the Syrian army is just not doing a good job in Lebanon. The only good job they're doing is stealing the country wealth and taking it back with them too.
You're Lebanese and you want the Syrians out? And where do you see responsibility likely lying for this assassination, Gus?
Well, the Syrians, they have assassinated the ex-president Bashir Ismail, may he rest in peace. And they assassinated the following president, René Mawad, may he rest in peace as well. And they have assassinated Prime Minister Hariri. That's 101% positive. Their forces, their security intelligence services is all over the land, sir.
So you're laying it right at their doorstep. There's another view that it's Syria behind it. Gus, thank you very much for your call. Let's get another caller. Zahi is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Zahi. You're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm another Lebanese, but I don't necessarily share the opinion of the first caller who called Mr. Hariri a person that had nothing to do with the war in Lebanon. Well, from my understanding and from reading a number of books, he did pay certain militias. He was a big finance, and those militias were actually linked to Syria, amongst other Lihbaas, group, and he did build his company, Saudi Arabia, built for free the Syrian palace, the Syrian presidential palace.
So what do you take from that, Zahi? What should we learn from that now?
Well, he's just basically like an old shoe that has a hole in it. Syria doesn't need it anymore. It's a liability. He can bribe his way into elections in the next few months, and he can get the... He's proven that he could kick butt, basically, and he can bring whoever he wants just because he can pour in millions.
And you're saying they didn't want that on the landscape. So, hey, thanks for your call. Fawaz Yerzhi, is it the caller suggesting that Mr. Hariri was just so wealthy that he was a factor Syria could not control that made him a threat?
Well, I mean, 2 points, Tom, just a point of clarification. Rafiq al-Hariri's legacy was very much mixed. During his administration, accusations were made about endemic corruption in the country. Many politicians, even the ones now who are praising al-Hariri, were highly critical of the extent and the scale of the corruption during his administration. Mm. And as a result of his wealth, Tom, I think he was able to maintain a kind of a buffer zone between, on the one hand, Syria and the anti-Syrian forces in the country. And yes, in many ways, the truth is, Rafiq al-Hariri represents a major constituency in the country.
That being? Not
just money, but remember, he represents the Sunni community, one of the most important constituencies in the country.
Sure.
And as such, it represents a threat, not just to President Amin Lahoud and the pro-Syrian elements, but also to any kind of, you might say, total control of the country.
Mm-hmm. Nobody could get a bit in his teeth exactly with his prominence and with his wealth. Waleed is calling from Boston. Waleed, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I'm a bit perplexed, with regard to Syria claiming that it has nothing to do with this bombing. If their presence is to help the Lebanese not to kill each other and to save them from the Zionist aggression, so the Israeli aggression.
Yeah.
Therefore, they should be, with that argument, they should be in control of the security situation in Lebanon.
But Waleed, you know, in Iraq, the United States is supposed to be there to bring security, among other things, and you've seen what that's like.
Absolutely, but 200 pounds of TNT is no small, amount of explosive that can be transmitted into Lebanon and without any detection.
And we're reading 600 plus pounds of dynamite here. That's a big carload.
Exactly. Second thing, I mean, Harieri drives, you know, he has the latest technology from Europe and the United States in his convoy. You know, he has the money to spend hundreds of millions on his technology. For his technology to fail and not to detect the bombs, it's just not, it's mind-boggling for anyone to understand.
Well, got it. Waleed, thanks for your call. But we read, Ambassador Murphy, that this car was in motion when it hit the convoy. I mean, even the U.S. military can't keep exploding cars away from its convoys. Yet we hear again and again in the last couple of days that Syria's intelligence presence is so deep in Lebanon that an attack of this scale could not have gone without them knowing about it, could not have been developed. Does that sound credible to you?
It has a credible ring to it, yeah. I mean, when we talk about ending the occupation, no one assumes that that means a total withdrawal of the Syrian presence or the Syrian influence. Even the workers, you have a million Syrian workers. Well, the Lebanese, they're there because the Lebanese, by and large, don't want to do a lot of the jobs the Syrian workers are ready to do.
Mm.
So the question of that bomb, it was so big that it didn't have to pinpoint Hariri's car, as I understand
right.
It was so vast that it could wipe out the whole cavalcade.
Took out a big chunk of a full city block there. If I was yours, as you said at the outset, that the Lebanese are terrified now. How much instability do you see this ratcheting up in Lebanon and beyond? Do we see the potential makings of region-wide instability beyond Iraq's borders here?
Well, no, I won't go that far to say that somehow the, assassination of Hariri will likely have regional repercussions. I think, as you know, Tom, Syria believes, Syria and Hezbollah in Lebanon believe they are at war. And they believe somehow the United States and Israel are basically trying to exert pressure and military pressure in order to put their agenda in place. So if you listen carefully to the rhetoric coming from the pro-Syrian elements in Lebanon, particularly Hezbollah and the Baathists and others, they believe it's a war. It's taking place. Iraq, I mean, what's happening in Lebanon, according to them, is an extension of the American onslaught on Iraq and, of course, the defeat of the Palestinian resistance movement in Palestine. But the big question in Lebanon, really, it seems to me that the situation in next a few weeks and months will likely, become more volatile. That is, Lebanon politics will become more polarized further between pro-Syrian elements and the opposition in the country. Mm-hmm. This is where the fear is that the situation could spiral out of control. And this is why, because there is no longer a buffer zone, Tom. Al-Hariri was a buffer zone between the pro-Syrian forces and the opposition. And now who's going to play this particular role?
That zone embodied in one man as of Monday, gone. It's quite a picture. Fawaz Yerzeyz, we're out of time, but we're very grateful to you for being with us tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
Fawaz Yerzeyz, author of America and Political Islam, professor at Sarah Lawrence College, and Ambassador Richard Murphy, U.S. Ambassador to Syria and Saudi Arabia in your long career. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio. Support.